The book of Matthew, Matthew chapter 15 today. I'm not usually one that preaches unique or special messages on Mother's Day or Father's Day. I like to stick to the text. However, the text in Colossians wasn't exactly suited for this morning. And also, the other thing to keep in mind is I know that there is a number of situations and families, both here in Oikos and outside, that many of you know about that I think would be good and helpful to be addressed when it comes to parenting and children and those kind of things. So we're going to turn to Matthew chapter 15, starting in 21, where Jesus meets a unique situation. And I think my prayer and my hope is you will walk away from this passage this morning greatly challenged and encouraged of what, you know, saving faith looks like. So read with me Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 through 28. It says, "And Jesus went away from there and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying, 'Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon.' But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and begged him, saying, 'Send her away, for she is crying out after us.' And he answered, 'I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel.' But she came and knelt before him, saying, 'Lord, help me.' And he answered, 'It is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs.' She said, 'Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table.' Then Jesus answered her, 'O woman, great is your faith. Be it done for you as you desire.' And her daughter was healed instantly." So you know that I often like to put the sermon in a nutshell in one sentence. And here is the bullet point today that hopefully you can write down, walk away with. Basically, it's this: saving faith pours out our emotions to God and pays attention to His Word. Saving faith pours out our emotions to God and pays attention to His Word. First of all, let's cover the first part of it. Pours out our emotions to God. First of all, in the beginning, it says, Jesus went away from there and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. Now, I understand that Jesus wants to get away from all the demands of being surrounded by people, the challenges of the Pharisees now pushing against His ministry. You know, even though Jesus was the God-man, it doesn't mean that He was unaffected by the travels, by the people, by the preaching, by the ministry, by the requests, the challenges, so on and so forth. Physically, His body craved rest. In fact, it demanded us. He bore the same body as you and I. Jesus was... But what's amazing is that Jesus was perfect even in the midst of His weariness, His exhaustion, and His suffering. You know, I don't know about you, but one of my biggest weaknesses is when I'm tired and hungry, right? And then you'll see the real Eric, you know? Probably see the real you. But one of the biggest proofs of Christ's perfection is when He responds when He's tired, when He's exhausted. It's like, wow, I hope I could just be a partial part of that. Now, it's interesting because Jesus gets away. Mark, the parallel passage, the same story, has slightly different details when it says this. Not only did he get away from Tyre and Sidon, but he entered a house and did not want anyone to know, yet he could not be hidden. So by the sounds of it, he wasn't there apparently for very long. Maybe he was there for a day, maybe he was there for a couple of days, but he wasn't there for very long before this woman found him, discovered him, and as we'll see, started begging of him. Now, I want to go back to the recognition that he got out of Israel, and he's moving into Tyre and Sidon. Now, this just shows you how desperate Jesus was to get away at this point in His ministry. It's the only time in the Gospels that you see Jesus leaving Israel proper. He crosses the border. You know, you go through a state line, right? Welcome to Kentucky, or welcome to Georgia, or welcome to Florida. You know, you're leaving one. He's leaving the country of, and I'm sure there weren't any signs there, but, you know, he leaves the comforts of Israel, what's known to him, and I'm sure his disciples were a little wondering what's going on too, right? And he leaves and he's getting out of Dodge and he goes to Tyre and Sidon, which is in the middle of paganism, you know? There are no more Jewish, you know, cultural comforts there. It's an uncomfortable place and it's an uneasy place, and I'm sure the like I said before, the disciples were wondering, what are in the world are we doing here? Verse 22 says, "And behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying, 'Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon.'" Now, it's interesting that Matthew is, if you don't know about the different gospel writers, Matthew is writing to who? Who's his main audience? The Gospel of Matthew is written to the Jews, okay? And in fact, you'll see the most references and quotations from the Old Testament in Matthew because his audience is Jewish, okay? So it's interesting that he calls her a Canaanite woman. Mark's reference actually is much more Greek in orientation. And the Canaanites are one of the most bitter enemies of the Jews, okay? It goes all the way back to Genesis. And so, you know, it's not only a foreign land, it's not only a foreign people, it's the enemies, you know? And maybe it could even be dangerous. And so this woman who's approaching Jesus just isn't non-Jewish, she's a Canaanite, you know? Now, if you think racism is bad, and it's not really. I mean, America is the most free place that multi-ethnics ever, you know, if you think racism is good, there's a lot of other places you go, you know, and if you just speak slightly different, your life could be ended. America is a very incredible place of diversity where people of all kinds of languages and backgrounds can get along fairly well. There's a whole underlying theme of why we're seeing racism come up in our culture. But this was truly racist, you know. The Jews hated pretty much everybody else, and the people pretty much hated them, and, you know, everybody hated everybody. It's interesting that when this woman approaches Jesus and the disciples, she's not just non-Jewish, she's a Canaanite. And she comes to him because her daughter is severely oppressed by a demon. Now, it's interesting that phrase, whenever you're doing Bible study, it's always good to look at different translations and see how, and when you see a word that's translated differently, if you take five or six translations, you see a word translated three or four different ways and four or five different, you kind of want to pay attention to that word, because here in the ESV it says severely oppressed by demon, NASB says cruelly possessed, other translations say miserably, or the idea of being tormented. And it's a really interesting word. The word is actually kakos, which is the idea of evil or wickedness. So her daughter wasn't just passively being influenced by this demon. She was extremely possessed. There was something dramatically wrong with her daughter. Okay? Maybe there were extreme outbursts. Maybe there were explosions of violence. Maybe there was yelling, maybe there was throwing of stones, cursing, destroying things. I mean, you can just imagine her life was a nightmare. This mom was dealing with a daughter who was making life a living heck, you know? I mean, she was exhausted, hopeless, angry, and desperate. Okay? And I tell you what, as many of you know, many of you are going through your own challenges or have gone through your own challenges as parents. When you see children suffer, it is about the greatest pain a parent can endure. Especially, I think, moms. Moms are much more emotionally connected to how children respond or act or decisions they make. Children, you will probably never know. Well, you won't. You will never know until you have your own children. It's hard to, I mean, guys, we kind of connect our identity to our jobs and our success or fail. You know, one of the greatest things for a dad to go through is losing a job, being fired or let go or dismissed. Probably one of the hardest things for a guy. One of the hardest things for a mom is to watch her children or a child go wayward, or to suffer harm at the hands of someone else, or by a certain situation. It is really gut-wrenching. And this woman is coming to Christ. Christ is already exhausted, right? He's trying to get away from all the needs, all the crowds. He just wants some peace and quiet, right? And here this woman comes with a desperate situation, and she's an enemy. She's not even Jewish. It's not even in his target range of what he's been called to do, as you'll see later on. But this woman's situation is desperate. Apparently, she hears about Jesus, even though she's outside of Israel proper. She hears about this man, this Messiah, this worker of miracles, and he comes to maybe her town. Maybe it's her town, you know, he comes to. Maybe it's the neighboring town. Apparently, it's not too far, you know. But the moment she hears, she goes. And based on the story, it doesn't seem like he was there for very long until she shows up. She got word, she comes, and she rushes over there the moment she heard, and she couldn't take it anymore. The stress of dealing with this daughter that was demonically possessed, affecting her physically, emotionally, mentally, relationally. I mean, there was all, who knows what this woman was going through, but it was very challenging. We know that. And she was so desperate that she recognized there's only one cure, and it must be in this Christ person, which is the word Messiah. Messiah and Christ are the same word, okay? And so she comes to Christ, and it says in verse 22, and behold, a Canaanite woman from the region came out, and she was crying. And that word crying is actually, it's not that she cried, you know, one time. The Greek has a past tense, it's called the imperfect, and it's she was doing something in the past, not just she did it, but she was doing it. So she was crying continually, and the word for crying out here is this. It refers to someone who just isn't weeping and shedding a couple tears. It's someone who is moaning. One of the dictionaries says it refers to a loud cry or vociferation. It's a strong word expressing deep emotion. It imitates a hoarse cry like that of a raven or an inarticulate, brutish sound that comes out of an animal that is in great pain or fear. So I just want you to picture. Jesus is exhausted. Comes in this town to try to sneak away. I mean, who's going to know him up there, right? He's spent his whole entire life down in Israel. He's up in Galilee. You know, the verses before, the chapter 4, you know, he deals with things up on the Sea of Galilee, and he tries to sneak up, you know, across the north border of Israel just to get away for a little bit. He and his disciples, maybe not even all of them. And here this woman finds out about him, and she's crying out, you know. She just continually... She was loud, and it was probably awkward. It was probably awkward. I'm sure everyone there, the disciples, were feeling a little bit uncomfortable with it, because she didn't stop. You know, she was crying over and over again, "Lord, have mercy on me, Son of David, my daughter, have mercy, Lord, have mercy on me." Lord, Lord, she's sighing, sobbing, she's crying, she's weeping, she's yelling, she's loud. This is not just a, you know, someone who's sitting on the street, you know, just with a sign, "Feed me." You know, if it would be like someone, you know, homeless guy, you know, on the street, and they're coming up and they're banging on your window, "I need food, would you help me?" You know, he's loud and coming, he's like knocking on your window, he's trying to open the door. That's what this woman is doing. She's not just sitting there with a sign going, you know. She's doing anything she can to get the attention of Christ. That's how desperate her situation is. Some of you have been in that same situation, haven't you? You felt that same pain. Some of you right now are dealing with kids that you're heartbroken over. You know, I don't do well with emotions. I'm a very black and white thinker, very logical. I start to feel awkward when people start to cry. You know, I'm sure I would have done something very similar to what the disciples did, right? Because what did the disciples do? Read the passage. The disciples came to him and begged him, saying, send her away. For why? For she's crying out after us. I mean, they felt very uncomfortable. They're like, would you please just heal her and get rid of her, you know, or do something. Say your magic words. And, you know, because they've seen that before, right? They saw, I think it was Jairus came to him and said, my son's sick. And he just said, yeah, go back. And he's, you know, all he's do is say it. It's like, get rid of her, man. She's being annoying. You know, your spouse may not be able to handle your emotions. Your kids aren't going to understand them, moms. But God can. God can handle them. God can handle them. At first, the woman probably second-guessed herself. She comes crying, screaming, yelling. She's desperate. She's probably panicked. It's like, man, if this guy doesn't do something for me, I don't know what I'm going to do. I do not know what I'm going to do. And it's interesting, but before the disciples answer Jesus or respond to her, what does Jesus do? Up in verse 23, she cries, says 23, but he did not answer her a word. So can you imagine this? She comes with this incredible desperation. Jesus is acting like he doesn't even hear her, right? I mean, again, it's like the homeless guy with the sign, and what do? You just like, I don't know you're there, you know? I'm not saying you should do something, okay, you know, in that situation. But it's just easiest, right, just to ignore them. Like, yep, they're not there. And kind of what you get the feeling from this passage, that's what Jesus did. He didn't respond to her. Maybe he didn't look at her. I don't know. And then the disciples are like, get rid of her. Come on. Man, talking about a desperate situation. You're already desperate. You're living in the middle of paganism. We don't know anything about this woman and her family. There's no husband or father mentioned. We don't know how old the daughter is. We do know she's in the middle of paganism. Maybe this child was born outside of a family situation. Maybe she was a temple prostitute and she was used and abused. You know? Who knows what the situation is? But what does she do? She knows that the current paganism, the current false religion that she is worthless. There's nothing here in Tyre and Sidon that's going to help me. But there's this guy, this Jesus. There's some, I've heard about him. And then she goes and she gets this. She feels like she's getting the stiff arm, right? Kim and I were just talking about a passage, Psalm 77. You don't have to read there with me, but Psalm 77 is something very similar. This woman probably felt very similar. Psalmist is crying out to God in verse 7 through 9. Says, Lord, will the Lord spurn forever? Will he never be again favorable to us? His steadfast love, is it forever ceased? Are his promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion? So there are many times where the psalmists alone cry out similar things. God, are you not hearing me? Why have you forsaken me? I'm sure this woman felt the same thing. It's like, I thought he's this Messiah. I thought he's the one who cared. I thought he's the one who healed, and yet he's not even paying attention to me? Before we go any further, a couple things about saving faith. We said earlier in the bullet point, it brings your emotions to God. Your fears, your anger, your lust, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you bring it to God. You don't hide it. You don't downplay it. You don't water it down. You don't hesitate, and you don't hold back. You lay it all on the table. You don't try to make it sound nice or pretty or smooth. pastoral prayers aren't nearly as faith-filled as the desperate, bruised, brute beast sounds of pain and sorrow when a soul is ripped in two. I want to say that again. Pastoral prayers from pulpits like this one aren't nearly as faith-filled as the desperate, brutish beast sounds of pain and sorrow when your soul is ripped in two. Okay? Pour your emotions out to God. He can handle them. Second of all, saving faith comes to the right person. True belief is rooted in the right source. Notice in her language what she said. She says, have mercy, Lord. It's a title of respect and authority. She goes on to call him the Son of David. Son of David? Where does David come out of? Remember Tyre and Sidon? Old Testament? She remembered this David king, right? And there was some promise about David coming back that apparently she heard. So she throws that out there. You're this David coming back. You're that son that was talked about. Because you got to remember, in those days, how was history disseminated from generation to generation? What? Orally, it wasn't written down. And they orally passed on these stories. Do you not think that the stories from the days of King David and Solomon did not get passed down? They're next door neighbors, right? What's the Kentucky two families that fight? Yeah, that's not even in Ohio, and we know about that, right? Right? Same thing. I'm sure she heard, so she throws out these terms. She calls him Lord again, says, Lord, help me. At the end, she says, yes, Lord, even the dogs, eat the crumbs. And then she says, the master's table. She knows something about this man. It's not just a man. It's not just a religious teacher. This is the only guy who can help me. Faith in itself is utter foolishness. Faith in itself will not give you access to God. Faith in faith is vanity. The object of your faith is what's most important. To claim that you're a believer means nothing. Believe in whom? Believe in what? Biblical faith is rooted in a person. And this woman turned her back on the idols, and she cries out to Jesus, Lord, Son of David. She came to the conclusion that every person will be accountable for, that nothing but Jesus matters. All other resources, all other religions are worthless and useless. Now, the world loves to talk about faith, right? The world loves to talk about belief. Belief in all religions are valid. All roads lead to heaven. The Polar Express, right? What is the whole point of Polar Express, the kids' movie? Believe. Believe in what? Your belief makes it so? Your belief, it doesn't matter how passionately you believe, how sincerely you believe, you can be sincerely wrong. You can be sincerely dead, Any of you just go jump off a 20-story building and think you're going to fly, you can sincerely believe all you want you're going to fly, and you're going to smack the pavement and recognize, pretty quickly that you were wrong on the other side of eternity. This woman, in her desperation, cried out over and over again. She got louder and louder, but she expressed her emotions and her desperation to the right person. To the right person. Thirdly, so first, saving faith puts it all out to God. It doesn't hold back. You don't have to make it pretty. Second of all, it comes to the right person. God, the God of the Bible. Thirdly, it's persistent. Notice that she appears to get rejected three times, right? She shows up, she cries out, Jesus doesn't even give her the time of day, apparently. Tells his disciples, am I not sent to the lost sheep of Israel? She cries out again, Lord, help me. And now he says something about dogs and children. Right? And she rebuts him again. man, this woman does not give up. Grit and determination. Grit and determination. This, I tell you what, if you want to have faith, you can't be insecure. You got to be all in. And it's interesting that Jesus actually isn't rejecting her. He's testing her, right? He's testing to see if her faith is real and genuine. Fourthly, saving faith pays attention to what Jesus said. And this is an awesome passage, part of the passage. The woman is making everyone feel awkward and annoyed. The disciple is asked to get rid of her, you know. Please do something to make this moaning go away. And finally, Jesus said, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. Now, we don't know if he said this to her or his disciples. We don't really know if she heard it. You know, maybe she was crying so loud she didn't hear it. I mean, we really don't know. The passage isn't really explicit enough to help us understand. He said it. The disciples at least heard it. Whether she did or not, we don't really know. But, you know, it's interestingly, she comes back and she says, Lord, help me. By the way, this is the only prayer you need to pray to be saved. I'm sure you've all been in church services where they said, oh, and pray after me. And then they pray this like 10-minute prayer and you're like, I don't think these people even understand half of what you just prayed, you know. By the way, it only takes 3 words to get saved. Lord, help me. That's really about as simple as it is, guys. Let's not make the gospel more than that. I don't even think people even realize what they need saved from when they ask God for help, right? I mean, how many of you and I, we got saved and then we realized, wow, we were really bad off, you know? So when we evangelize, all we need to do is say, salvation is simply just saying, look, I'm done with my life, and God, I want yours. Help me. Lord, help me. There's one word that connects heaven and earth. It's the word help. Lord, me, help. Right? Isn't that the call of salvation? I'm here, you're there, and the only way that the two are going to get connected is by you doing it. That's the call of salvation, right? And if they're truly born again, they will dig into God's word and come to a greater recognition of how great God is and how pathetic they are. And that's one way that you know if you're truly saved, where if you look at yourself 3 or 4 years from now, you realize, wow, I had no idea how bad off I really was. You know? And then I walk another 3 or 4 years, like, wow, I still didn't know how bad off I really was. You know? I mean, that's the story. I mean, you don't get more confident in yourself as you get more sanctified. You get less confident in yourself and more confident in God. That's the definition of salvation, right? I mean, I love Paul Washer. Paul Washer says, you know that you repented if you keep on repenting. You repented to get initially saved, justified, but to continue in your sanctification, become like Christ, it's the same process. It's repenting. Yeah, I was an idiot. Yeah, I was selfish. Yeah, I was prideful, you know? And you see it more and more again. Now, Jesus isn't done with her. He's not playing with her. As I said before, he's not being cruel. He's testing her faith to see if it's real. And so he throws out this little, first of all, he's just not paying attention to her, see what she does. And then he mentions to the disciples, am I not sent to the lost sheep of Israel? And then she goes, Lord, help me. And then so he turns to her finally and says this, a little story, a little snippet. Maybe it was longer, I don't know, but all we have is this little phrase. Is it not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs? At first glance, it sounds kind of rude. But there are a couple things you need to know to help you understand the cultural context. First of all, there's 2 types of dogs. There's a word for dogs that's talking about the scavengers that roam the wild, kind of like coyotes, kind of like wolves, you know? You wouldn't want to leave your children out at night because you guys have heard of coyotes in town snatching cats and small dogs, right? I mean, it happens all the time. In Westerville, they have a coyote problem and people just wake up the next morning missing their dogs and cats. Same kind of things here. They're varmints, right? But that's not the word he uses. He uses a derivative of that word, and it's kind of like saying dog versus doggies. Dogs versus doggies. And when he says this word doggies, he's talking about family pets that were inside of people's homes. They weren't animals that they'd be afraid of. How many of you love your dogs? I have an extra dog in my house that doesn't belong to me. I love it. But its owner loves it. Okay? So that's one thing. So he's not like calling her like a derogatory name. Okay? The second part of the story is you got to recognize how they ate in that day. Back in the, especially in the Middle Eastern culture, even today, they don't use silverware. They don't have spoons and forks and knives. They ate with their fingers. And they often ate with bread. And it's not big loaves of like French bread that you and I, it's more like pitas. Actually, we actually just went out to eat in a Lebanese restaurant, which is a Middle Eastern restaurant. And a lot of stuff is on pita bread. And so when you order an appetizer, they serve pita, and then you rip off the pita bread and you dip it in the sauces, and that's how you would eat. And so at the end of the meal, what you would do is you would actually take the pita bread, and your fingers are all messy, and they didn't have napkins, okay? There are no napkins. They didn't want to wipe it on their, right? So you take the leftover pita bread, and you do like this with your hands, get all the bread, and what you do? You chuck that final piece of bread underneath the table, and guess who's there eating it up? The dogs. And your hands are mostly clean. Okay, that's how Middle Eastern eating worked. So this woman quickly hears this illustration, this story, and she is astute. What did Jesus do? He just cracked the door open, right? And what does she do? She takes this big crowbar of faith and determination, and she just wrenches it open, and she says, "Yes, Lord, even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall at their master's table." Now, I want to just, she's not asking to be treated like a Jew. She's not asking to sit at the table with Jesus, right? She's not asking to be treated as an equal. She's not asking to give me your time and attention. All she wants is the leftover. She doesn't need to dominate Jesus' time or energy. All she wants is one crumb, one moment, one nod. That's all she's asking for. She recognizes that the God who created the stars in a nanosecond has the universally unlimited, unthinkable, utterly unfathomable power that she needs. And in a millisecond, he can take care of her problem. Now, how big is God to you? Can he take care of all your needs like that? Or do you feel like he's going to have to labor and exhaust himself to meet your needs? I mean, think about this. God made the entire universe, and he rested because he wasn't tired. It didn't take his energy level down even a percent. He rested because he was setting us a model, because he knew we needed to rest and not drive ourselves through workaholism. And how does Jesus respond? "Oh, woman, great is your faith." You know what? He only says this twice. And both times, who does he say it to? Jews or non-Jews? Non-Jews. The centurion and her. And both times, because they recognized, the one time the centurion said, just say the command. I have people authority over me, and I tell them to go this, and they just do it. And Jesus is like, "Wow, I have not even seen any Jew have this kind of faith." And what does he do for this woman? Same thing. Great is your faith. You know, I tell you what, folks. I tell this all the time. I'll say it again. Kids, one of the most dangerous places to be raised is right here in the church. Parents, I want you to know that. You think you're doing your kids a favor by bringing them to church every week? You're actually not. You're making them more condemned if they reject Christ. You will burn hotter in hell because you spent 20 years of your life in church if you reject Christ. You'll be held more accountable to the God of the universe because you've been hearing good biblical teaching for your life. So kids, this is not a safe place if you continue to reject. hopefully it's a great place for you to be raised if you recognize the glories and the passion and the forgiveness and the holiness of God, and you call out for help. But if you resist God sitting in these chairs week in and week out, is not doing you any good. It's actually doing you more harm. Doing you more harm. So moms, boy, this woman is desperate, isn't she? She has a daughter that is suffering unimaginably. She pours out her emotions to the right person persistently, and then she pays attention to when he finally speaks, he pays attention to what he says. This is not a formula for faith. There's other scriptures of faith, you know, like Hebrews 11, others that help us understand what biblical faith is even more so. This isn't the end all. But the elements of faith is you have to bring all your crap to God. You got to be willing to lay it on the table. You know? You got to come to him. I mean, you can come to friends. There's a place for pastors. There's a place for friends. There's a place for counselors. But folks, at the end of the day, a pastor or a friend has to say, I'm sorry, I got to go home. I can't meet all your needs. A spouse can't meet all your needs. Moms, your children are never going to fully fulfill you. Dads, your work is never going to fully fulfill you. Your boss can still say you're fired tomorrow. Persistent. Bring all the emotions, come to the right person, persistent. Remember? Knocking, asking. God answers prayers. And then pay attention to what Jesus says. And the only way you can do that is not through some mystical yoga meditation, you know, trying to hear the word of God. I'm sorry, folks, that's not hearing the word of God. It's coming to the Bible, you know, and not the Message translation. A real good, solid translation. And hearing God's word. I tell you what, there's, like all of you, there's things going on in life that is really easy to get distracting. And I came across this passage because I've been listening in the car to the Gospels. Oh, man, it is so refreshing. I can't tell you. It has been actually a while since I've listened through the Gospels. Oh, man, it's so easy to get distracted. This world is chaotic. And I love Paul, and I love the Old Testament. Man, but when you just listen to Jesus, it's just so simple and spot on. It's like, oh, I needed to be reminded about my Savior, what he looks like in real life. And when I heard this passage, oh, that's what I want to preach on Mother's Day, because I want to encourage your hearts to get back and stay focused on the person of Christ. Let's pray. God, you are King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Lord, you know that there are a number of moms right